It is 2021. Cole Kublik, Greg McElroy, going to be joined by Jordan Rogers here in just a moment. 9 o'clock, Monday, July 19th.
And I want to tell you here at the top of the 9 o'clock hour about how great Bill Smith Buick GMC is. They are the national winner of the GMC President's Award as the best dealership for GMCs in the country. Also have Alabama's largest selection and the lowest prices of any dealer around. They've got the best price on a new GMC or Buick, and they're on Highway 31 in Coleman, or you can shop online at Bill Smith Buick GMC to have the car delivered right to your driveway like a 2021 GMC 1500 SLT 4x4 loaded. Absolutely loaded. MSRP, $60,125. The sale price at Bill Smith, $52,995. This is a family business. Locally owned for 65 years. Go see my guys, Andy Cole and Jonathan Yeager. Andy's the GM. The sales manager is Jonathan Yeager, two of the best guys around, because 75% of their business are repeat customers because they have great customer satisfaction. Absolutely unbelievable with an incredible inventory. This is Bill Smith Buick GMC. They're redefining the car business, so go see them on Highway 31 in Coleman or shop online at BillSmithBuickGMC.com.
Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network sitting in with us now here at SEC Media Days 2021. You good?
Yeah. Got my coffee in. We're rolling.
You brought me one, so thank you. I appreciate
that.
Well,
I ordered three. The Uber Eats showed up with three of them, and I looked over. Yours was empty. I was like, my boy needs a little more juice.
Because Greg got his delivered by I don't know, the service department here within the SEC. So I don't know how that happened.
It's Greg McElroy.
Of course.
Well, first of all,
he's
I would get him one. I've been asking him for now 6 days, what's your order? He's like, hey, I will give you a bunch of money for Starbucks every morning. I'm like, dude, I'll bring you a Starbucks. I just need your order. Still have yet to receive what the order is. I would imagine it's probably like a skinny vanilla.
That's the third member of our
team.
That's
Tom Hart.
Actually. Yes. Jordan and I, pretty easy. Venti iced Americano.
Boom.
And Tom is
straight.
Tom
to
likes
the veins.
Tom likes a lot of the flavors and a lot of the fluff. And his is the complicated order. So before we get into quarterback play, because obviously having both of you here, I want to do that. Jordan, name, image, likeness has been a really big topic of conversation this offseason. Where a lot of people thought that was going to be massive for, let's just say specifically college football players or college athletes, was social media. You're somebody who has a very distinct understanding of sort of how this works, advertising on social media and being able to push products on social media. You have over 1 million followers on Instagram. The only collegiate athlete that I can even think compares to you would be Olivia Dunn at LSU, who's a gymnast, and she has over 1 million. But let's talk in the 50,000, 100,000, 150,000, 200,000 follower range. What's realistic? Because a lot of people think this is just life-changing money because they have 100,000 followers on Instagram. What would you say is the reality to what these kids are realistically going to be able to earn?
I mean, the reality is it's great money for a college kid that didn't have an ulterior source of income. But the reality is it's not that much money. I like speaking numbers, so I don't mind sharing stuff. I got over 1 million followers. When I do a story, I get paid $6,000.
Your Instagram story. So when you
Instagram
talk about
story,
movement
three,
watch,
five frames now.
When you were showing your underwear on your story the other day.
Now, the companies that will pay that money are only going to be the companies that are direct-to-consumer national brands, where these players can link a website and someone can go from that story directly to the website and buy something. That's the only way you're going to turn $5,000 or $6,000 into $10,000 or $15,000 of sales. Right now, just because you have 1 million followers, understand this about social media, doesn't mean 1 million people watch your stories. Not at all. The highest engagement rates is right around 20%. So you have 1 million followers, about 200,000 people on a good day are going to see that. Of that, how many actually convert? And then of that conversion rate, your demographic of followers is really the most important. And that's where I think the facade of we're going to earn a ton of money on social media as college athletes. Who follows you? Well, college kids, guys that like sports.
Right.
Those people don't spend a ton of money on online shopping. That's just not true. It's the females traditionally are the demographic that marketers want to tap into. So, yeah, they're going to make – if you have 100,000 followers.
Let's just be real. That's where you and JoJo have a huge advantage.
Absolutely.
The large portion of those, that fan base, yeah. I mean, my wife's one of them.
Yeah, that fan base is 25 to 40-year-old females, essentially. I mean, like 93% of my followers are female, and those are people that run the households, that buy things on Instagram,
right.
buy things for their husbands. I mean, how often are you buying something on Instagram for your wife?
I don't even know how to do it.
Right? But your wife will buy something for you, right?
Absolutely.
So these athletes, look, they're going to make some good money. We're talking hundreds of dollars, maybe a couple thousand dollars here and there. But I really think the money for these athletes is in local appearances.
Yeah.
We saw that with Texas A&M. Spiller, Damani both got 10 grand. That's where businesses can say, I can get a couple hundred people here to my bar, my establishment, whatever it is, and that's where you can actually see money in the community convert. That's where I think they'll make most of the money. Now, there'll be a few big guys that nationally will have a couple brands that'll make some dough, but for the most of the guys, it's going to be the local stuff. I think
you
really
think about like
money.
A Zion when he was at Duke, he probably could have made some real money.
Those guys are going to make money, 100%. Commercials, big brands, totally, but the 99% of the guys are going to
make... They're not getting rich on Instagram.
No, they're going to make thousands of dollars, which is great for a college.
Sure.
Are you kidding?
Absolutely.
I felt rich when I made $300
right.
on a CMA week in Nashville helping out my buddy. Like, I was like, are you kidding? I can go to the bar? And I'm, you know, I mean, that's what they want, but that's what it's going to be.
When you think about the... I just want to hit on this one more before we get to some ball topics or whatnot. When you think about the local appearances and things like that, how concerned should coaches be? And this is not—it's not because you know you would have done this or anything, but like I'm genuinely concerned about guys prioritizing. For instance, summer workouts going on right now, prioritizing. Hey, man, I got a 7 a.m. workout, but dude, I can make $400 by going to the bar tonight. Like, I think that's going to be a balance that college coaches haven't had to deal with ever because of the requirements now of the student athlete beyond that of their football. So how do you think that's going to work out here over the next couple of years with guys trying to make money and coaches encouraging them to do so while still putting forth their best effort each and every day when they work out?
It's going to be a huge tug of war. I mean, how can it not be, right? You got guys that may or may not have a big NFL future and like, coach, I got a chance to make $5,000. I know we got workouts at 2, but
right.
I'm going to go make that money. And if you don't want to play me because of that, then that'll become a big issue, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, so I think you're going to have players taking advantage of that, but it happens at all levels. I have a quick story that's a really good one that just reminded me. So when I was in Tampa, Josh Freeman had just exited, and there was a big falling out there, right? Talking about balancing the marketing aspect and the lifestyle with your job, which is
Josh,
now what college,
Josh's lifestyle is different.
So which is now what college kids have to do, right? So there was a story when I first got in the building, and it happened a few weeks earlier because I got there a handful of games in. So Saturday, before you travel as an NFL team, you have walkthroughs. Very
right.
serious. Last thing you do, and then you get on the bus. Josh is a starting quarterback. He no-shows. Not there. And then he shows up as
to go to a game.
Yes. And then so as
not practice.
No. The walkthrough, the final walkthrough before the game. And then in the locker room as everyone's getting ready to get on the bus, Josh strolls in like nothing's happening. He's getting ready. And guys are like, hey, where were you? Coach wants to see you. And this is Greg Schiano. And he's like, oh, okay. So now – through the vine of people telling me the story, Schiano included and others, you know, Josh comes rumbling in, jovial into Schiano's office. And, you know, Schiano's kind of he's a little bit of a hard old ball coach, right? Coach is like, where were you? He's like, oh, I got to show you this, got to show you this. And he did a photo shoot that morning or that night, not sure which one, the night before, of him dressed up as Michael Jackson with some pet tigers. And so he's showing Schiano these photos. Like, look, isn't that, how cool is that? And Schiano's like, we had a walkthrough this morning. We have a game tomorrow. What are you doing?
Yeah.
He showed it to him.
I mean, so you never know.
He showed it to him.
You're going to love this, coach.
Yeah,
coach, this is sweet.
But these are the kind of things that now players are going to be balancing, and coaches are going to be trying to figure out how to navigate those type of things, too, because that's the reality now.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like you mentioned, Jordan, those local appearances are not necessarily down the street. So Alabama, Birmingham,
totally.
Mobile, College Station, Texas, Houston, Dallas, other places. So, I mean, that's not – you just – drive 30 minutes and get there or 10 minutes down the road. So that obviously could become a little bit complicated. It feels complicated right now to get really a grasp on SEC quarterbacks this year. I'm interested to get your thoughts on some of the big quarterback battles. One going to be here today. Let's start with LSU. You had that team a couple of times last year. You've seen these quarterbacks operate. Who do you think wins it? And what's the ceiling for that position in Baton Rouge this fall?
Look, I think there's a lot to like about Max Johnson. I mean, how can you not like what he did in circumstances that weren't ideal last year when he came in, the type of games that he was thrust into against Florida? I mean, he's a great decision maker. He plays with a sense of urgency, yet he's calm for how young he is. But here's what I'll say. I think it's Miles Brennan. I think it's Miles Brennan's job.
Wow.
I mean, the dude threw 11 touchdowns and 3 interceptions through, his first 3 games?
He played well.
He played really well. And
Mississippi State wasn't his fault.
No.
I mean, He gave him a chance.
100%. I thought he was improved. I thought he was playing at extremely high level. And what I think will play to his advantage is now bringing Jake Peets in, who is of the tree of Joe Brady. Jake Peets was with Brady, with the Panthers. So he's going to bring – I don't think they got rid of all that terminology, but he's going to bring all that terminology 100% back and some more. And Brennan has the luxury of having been in that exact system behind Joe Burrow, how Joe did it, what Joe was seeing on the exact concepts with the exact verbiage. I think he's going to have that leg up. Max Johnson's a really smart kid. He's not going to be behind by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
By a long distance, but I think Miles Brennan is extremely underrated. I have him as my fourth best quarterback in the conference right now.
When you think about
this season,
but when you think about this here, obviously it's put up or shut up time for O. A lot of people know that he's got to have a good year this year. Not that he's going to get fired or, but everything kind of going on in the program. If they go off the rails, they lose to UCLA, and all of a sudden they finish 500 again, anything's possible. I mean, they're not exactly thrilled with how things have gone.
Totally.
At least recently in Baton Rouge, so that's to be expected. But if there is a scenario where the two quarterbacks are close, one's a freshman or an underclassman. Is he a freshman, sophomore? I can't keep track of the eligibility anymore. Yeah. Freshman, sophomore,
depends
whatever,
what he, wants to do
whatever
game,
he is.
Right? Did he want to take that extra
he's
year?
He's a second-year player. So he's young, and then you have Miles Brennan, who's quite a bit older. If it's close, do you lean towards the younger player?
I mean, it's a great question. Here's what I'd say. I think what that team was lacking a little bit last year was leadership. They had all the talent in the world at a bunch of different positions, but they didn't have a guy that held that team accountable in the manner that Joe Burrow did. I think initially, right away, Brennan is a guy that can – now, it's not his personality. He's not exactly the Joe Burrow, but he's a guy that can hold this team accountable and can have that leadership role, being an older guy, having the experience in the system. So I think – if they are that close, if I'm Coach O, I'm leaning that way. I'm leaning to the guy that can rally the troops, that can calm everyone down, that can keep everyone level-headed, that can lead this team because they have the talent. They just haven't galvanized into something that can be a successful product or as successful as it should be on the field. So that's why I maybe would lean towards Brennan in that scenario where they are so close. But they are going to be close. So I think that will be the deciding factor is Brennan's going to be a little further ahead in that offense with Jake Peets. How it was run under Joe Brady with Joe Burrow, and I think the leadership aspect will also bump him a little bit ahead of Max Johnson.
As a quarterback, you often have to multitask, read the defense. You have to know the formation.
I knew Cole was going to go there. Like, why do you
have to move? Aren't we on radio?
Motion. We are. I never had to have makeup for radio before. But
this is the most ridiculous. I knew you're going to do this. Great. Like, that's why I was even hesitant to ask Linda to come down, because I do have to have makeup applied mid-segment, and I listen to everything that Jordan had to say, and
I completely haven't seen you in forever.
I completely agree with everything that Jordan just said, by the way. I do think leadership is of the utmost importance at LSU, and you're not showing great leadership by throwing your teammate under the bus right now.
Well, I just I wanted people to know
what's the makeup for?
I am getting makeup applied right now as we speak. Little powder on the face right now.
Little pow, pow.
Now we're going to go little Bronskis.
That spot was a little shiny.
Yeah, little Bronskis.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get it dialed in.
Okay. You get back to your makeup. I'll talk quarterbacks with Jordan, because I just wanted people to understand that you're able to do multiple things at once.
I'm back.
Have makeup applied, do radio, listen, and still be an effective analyst.
You look great.
So, yes.
Actually,
you look a lot better.
That was what you needed.
I went three shades darker just for a little summer bronzing.
Let's go to another team going to be here, Jordan, Florida. Is this a done deal? Because there are some people that say Richardson still has an outside shot to maybe win this quarterback battle. You know Coach Mullen. You talk to him often. You've had that team the last few years. We have a pretty good idea what Emory Jones is. Seems like he's a really good fit, but is this all said and done?
I think it is. Now, that could change five games in, depending on how things go. But I think right now Emory Jones is the leader in the clubhouse. I think he is an extremely underrated, accurate passer. I mean, you look at him and some of the gadget stuff and the packages that he would come in, use his athleticism. At his core, he's a pass-first guy that can operate within the pocket. He has a live arm, and I think he's more accurate than people give him credit for. Now, I do believe it will be very important to use his legs, because this team struggled running the football last year. I mean, they just struggled being consistent at all. So I think that element will be important, as always. But again, Dan Mullen does not get enough credit for how he develops quarterbacks, how he developed Dak Prescott from a guy that was a physical downhill runner that had a live arm to a guy in his last year that was an extremely talented thrower of the football and really operated solely from the pocket. And as well, What I love about Dan Mullen's approach in his offense is it looks complicated, but it is not. I mean, so many times when you're breaking down the film, you see the same concepts over and over again, but run out of completely different formations, different motion shifts, different personnel groups. So his quarterbacks are going to be ready. To that point, Richardson could be ready to play week one because this offense is not super complex. It's quarterback friendly, but I do think it's going to be Emery. I think he's got the leg up.
I'd be surprised if it's not. I mean,
no, I would too. I just there are certain people that say Richardson's got a chance to get it, and it's not over. I think it's Emory Jones, but
I bet Richardson has a role.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me if he had a role. I just don't see him being the down and down out guy. What message does that send? Assuming Emory plays well in spring camp or fall camp, I mean, sure. That of course that's the ultimate.
He's waited his turn, just like
he's waited his turn. Yeah. What precedent does that send? Not all that unlike Miles Brennan. Guy waited his turn. He's going to get the first crack at it last year. A couple talented freshmen, T.J. Finley, Max Johnson, doesn't matter. Miles Brennan, his team. That was verbatim what Ed Orgeron said last year. Now, part of that is because of productivity, all the other things. It's fine. But the veteran guy that waited his turn should get the first crack at it. I would be highly surprised if what I've seen from Emory Jones, I'd be highly surprised if he didn't play really well when given the opportunity to lead the ones this fall.
All right, can you stick around one more segment?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because there's quarterbacks that still need to be talked about, but if you're thinking about lunch, obviously you need to head down, check out our friends at Tostadas, located right there on the square, downtown Homewood, across from our friends at Soho Social. It's the traditional Mexican fare along with the specialties. Monday is Margarita Day, $3 margaritas all day. At Tostadas, go get the Conecuh queso, go get the pomegranate guacamole. You can sit outside on the patio. Now the rain looks like it's passed, or you can just enjoy some of the sports inside on all the TVs there. Tell Hal and the guys that we sent you in and that you want to try the Conecuh queso. It's Tostadas, located right there on the square in downtown Homewood. There's a quarterback that we have not discussed that Jordan Rodgers took a lot of heat for being very honest about last year. I want to know his thoughts on that individual next right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Welcome back in. SEC Media Days 2021. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning live on WJOX 94.5. 9:22 a.m. Monday, July 19th. Get right back to Jordan Rodgers here in just a moment. Good news is I'm going to be jammed up with Media Days coverage all week. But the kids have a place to head into the backyard and play. Thanks to our friends at Backyard Adventures. Stop by Cahaba Valley Road now. You can climb on. You can check out all the different options for all the different playgrounds that they have. And the best part is, when you decide the options you want, Jeff and the guys will customize it. They'll measure your backyard, decide exactly what you need, what's going to fit best, and what's going to serve you and your kids' needs, and then they come put it all together. That's right. No hammer, no wrench, no saw, no drill, no nothing. They come put it together in the backyard, and the warranty's going to last a lifetime. When you move, they're going to move it for you. And three different series of customizable playgrounds to go check out. And if you're looking for a birthday party, we had my son's birthday party there. You can rent a space. They got a party coordinator to help you out. They'll set it up. They'll clean it up. You take the gifts and the kids, party, go home. It's all good. Backyard Adventures. Visit them online at BackyardAlabama.com or call 408-4FUN. That's 408-4386.
I don't feel like Jordan and I have been invited to Cole's house to play on your backyard.
Seriously.
Adventure.
You've
play,
been to playground. My backyard.
I've not been invited. I've not been given the green light.
I'm going to test it. I'm good.
You're definitely
I'm good.
Under.
I know I'm good.
Jordan's under. I'm flirting with it.
I was on the swing one day last week.
Yeah.
And I feel like Jeff told me when we were out there, he's like, "You're good. Don't worry about it."
Uh-huh.
And so I think my wife was looking at different options, and they kind of told her, "Be careful with the, you know," talking about me. And so I'm on the swing, and she's like, "Honey, you should probably get off that.
30 more pounds, honey, and you're good."
That thing's creaking.
What are you talking about?
It's creaking. It's shaking.
I'm not that heavy anymore. We're good. So, yeah, Jordan's going to come check it out tonight.
It's sweet.
I'm getting all over it.
Kids will love it. Yeah, the kids will love it. Yeah.
Oh, it's sweet. It's a sweet setup.
All right, so fair, unfair. I don't think it's unfair. You took some heat for your analysis on Bo Nix last year. I think a lot of people have a pretty good understanding of what you thought he was doing wrong, what he needed to improve upon, what was different. And I'm interested to get your thoughts on, just one, him as a player, two, T.J. Finley now being behind him, who's a guy that has real SEC experience, is going to be eligible, and then three, the system that he's now going to play in, how that could change and what that means for your expectations of Bo Nix in 2021.
Yeah, I think if you listen to everything I said last year, I'd fair to say 75-80% was more critical of the system than it was Bo Nix. Now, the quarterback's never going to be without fault, right? We make the decisions. We're the one pulling the trigger at the end
that?
Of the day.
Can you say that again?
75-80% of the issues with Bo Nix was more
to
do
with
the system.
Quarterback parts.
Oh.
They can be at fault.
Oh, yeah, quarterbacks, absolutely. Sure. At the end of the day,
we need to get that
you
on.
You've got to pull the trigger.
You can dial up the perfect play. Your dude's got his eyes in the wrong spot. You got issues.
By
right?
the way, you would love it. I was trying to explain to Tess, Joe Testore, he joined us earlier, and he was talking about Kentucky and, like, can they get the ball down the field? I was like, Joe, I was on the sideline at the Georgia game.
That was unbelievable.
The second we would go to break, Greg, and Jordan would be like, Cole, what is happening? Why can't he get the ball
just
out of his hand?
Drop back and throw it 60 yards as far as you can. Just do it once.
Just to show
what
that
happens.
You can do it. Just to keep him honest. Long foul ball.
To see
prove us wrong.
Yeah.
All right. So,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so here's my thing with Auburn and with Bo Nix's development. I remember being in college at Vandy, and I had a psychology class, and I didn't like that class. But I had this friend in my class, Elizabeth. She was really smart. And so every time we had a test, I'd be like, hey, I think I'm going to sit next to you, right? I mean, those Scantron tests, you can peek over a little bit. So I didn't have to know the substance of what I needed because I had a little help. I had the answers to the test per se. Now, I didn't do this all the time. It was, you know, once or twice I was peeking over. But one day, teacher walks by and starts handing out the tests in their different colors. So Elizabeth sitting next to me got a completely different test. And I go, oh, shoot. I started to panic because I don't have the answers anymore. That's what happens with Bo Nix. Gus Malzahn's offense, when you really break it down, had one or two options. And Gus Malzahn got into a habit of thinking he knew exactly where the ball should go. And the plays were called in that manner. So Bo Nix, before the snap, knows, okay, this is where my coach thinks the ball should go in this situation. And when the answers, you don't have them anymore, when the test changes, when the defense does something different, Bo Nix had nowhere to go with the ball. And also, he didn't know what he was supposed to do. You watch film, and why is he always drifting to the right? Why do his eyes go to the right and he stays to the right? You know why? Because he has never been told to work backside, because there are no routes for him to work backside. Otherwise, as a quarterback, that's where your eyes would go. So this offense, I think, really handcuffed Bo Nix's development, because at a time early in this league, Gus Malzahn had tempo, and tempo meant defenses, before they knew what to do, went simple. So Gus Malzahn could guess probably 80% accuracy what the defense was going to be, and he could dial up a play where he said, this is where the ball is going to go, and it did go there. He can't do that anymore. Everybody's used to tempo, but he still had that same offense, and that's why Bo Nix looked the way he did, in my opinion, 80% of the time.
And it's one of those things, too. And Bo, in fairness, like, let's talk a little bit about the offseason. We've done this all week last week. Impossible offseason for a second-year player to make tremendous strides.
Totally.
It really was. I mean, I don't care what anyone – you can put him in – he could have run the veer, and he wouldn't have made strides. Just wasn't going to happen. Not with no spring, abbreviated fall, weird summer. Just wasn't a good year to really progress as a player. So let's take that all with a grain of salt. What I like now is it will be thoughtful. There will be a rhyme and reason for why he's going where he's going to go. And let's be honest. Bo Nix, yes, well-schooled. His dad played, his dad coaches, all this other stuff. Well-schooled. Bad mechanics.
Yeah.
And if you look at Brian Harsin's tenure at Boise State, the guy has started three freshman quarterbacks that all had various levels of success. Rippon, Bachmeier, several guys that he's seen over the course of his tenure that started young. That's what he's got to do. Go back to absolute ground zero with Bo Nix. Break him down completely. And let's build him up from there, because the skill and the talent level is outrageous. He's just got to learn how to play the position. And Jordan, to me, that's not what he's done very good job of the last couple of years.
No, and that's the thing. You have to give him the knowledge to have answers.
Right.
Right? I mean, in high school, it's very easy to say, hey, this guy's going to be open. When you're as talented as Bo,
yeah,
it happens.
Figure it out.
And at Auburn, when you're in this system and you're guessing, trying to figure out where the route's going to be and dialing up only routes with two concepts. I mean, Greg, they don't run full field progressions.
No, half
it's
field.
Not in their system. It's always half field. So the quarterback, he looks one way, and he has nowhere to go except for that way. And Bo Nix, because he's an athlete, reverts to, let's play backyard ball. But that gets really sloppy when everything starts to fall apart. So it's going to be tough this year because he's losing his top three targets. No wide receivers returning at more than 100 yards. So there's not the familiarity there, not the talent that they did have last year, although they didn't use it or tap into it. So it's going to be difficult, but Jordan Palmer's guy I respect a ton. I talked to JP this last week about JT Daniels, about Bo, about some of the guys he trains. I mean, Bo Nix is one of the more talented throwers of the football. I mean, he is dripping with talent. Now, we've seen a lot of times in this crazy sport where talent doesn't
mean production, right?
Yeah. Right? And so Brian Harsin's got to develop Bo Nix, but he's got to not just simplify it so it's easy, but provide him with the knowledge so he can be a guy that has more answers on every single snap. And then the athleticism is the last thing he does after he gets through three or four reads, but he hasn't been asked to do that at Auburn.
And that's the key. You talk to Mullen, you talk to Levy, you talk to Lane, you talk to any offensive coordinator, Sark last year, and they'll tell you answers. Have answers for the problems that are posed, because there are going to be problems. Like you said, it's not Malzahn going out there running tempo, and we're probably going to get base.
Yeah.
Probably going to get cover two.
But that's
right.
What it was. Boom, in the early 2010s. He knew exactly what the defense was going to do. Now everyone runs tempo. Every defense has a multitude of packages they run versus tempo. It's not a surprise anymore.
No.
So he doesn't have the upper hand, and that's where that offense got stale over the last 4 years.
You kind of flirted with it a little bit earlier, but if you were ranking your SEC quarterbacks heading into this season, I'm very interested who would be one, who would be two.
Matt Corral's one. JT would be two. Three is an interesting one. I don't think there's any clear cut.
Yeah.
I tell you what, and this is more of a projection than it is sitting right now, I think Bryce Young's going to be a heck of a player. I mean, when I break down his film, I broke down every snap he had this last week.
Right.
And I loved the second time he even showed up in a game. Missouri, you know, for week one, he got some snaps against Tennessee. I think it was like the third play. They did a little zone read. He had a little toss on the first play. They ran the ball on the second play. The third play, he walks the line of scrimmage. Tennessee showing overload blitz to the field. He slides the line of scrimmage, full slide to the left. He's got a full field progression. What I love is that when you really break down the quarterback position, okay, you know what they're going to do. You go to the answer. But the guys that double check after the snap, right? I mean, you have to guess or have a educated guess of what they're going to do pre-snap, and then you have to confirm post-snap. He sees high rotation. He confirms it post-snap in rhythm, hits a comeback to the sideline over a flat defender. That's just stuff that young guys don't usually do really well. Yeah, they can make that throw, but with all the cheese and crackers and everything that happened before, sometimes not. So I think he's in that conversation. I also think Miles Brennan's in that conversation for three, but it gets a little muddy there for three for me.
See, like, I like Bryce Young's skill set a lot. Love it. You know, I love a lot of guys' skill sets, frankly, in the league. I think it's a talented league as far as Emory Jones is a good example. Love his skill set.
Baselick, same thing.
Tom Baselick.
He's done some really good things.
Haynes King. I mean, you go down the list. Will Rogers. I mean, everyone's got good skills in this league. You have to. You're not going to get recruited if you don't. But when the bright lights are on, that's when we find out about quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So, wow, yes. Last year is a great example. Wow, Les, yes. Last year I felt pretty good about Mac Jones. I didn't know.
No.
It wasn't like you couldn't have guessed that. No one could have felt really good about it. No one could have. So I think it's just one of those, and this goes for not just Bryce Young, but for every quarterback that's stepping into a starting role for the first time. You don't know what you have until your back's against the wall. Now, hopefully for some, your back will never be against the wall. For Alabama, hopefully at least early on in the season, as a 3-touchdown favorite against Miami, your back won't be against the wall. But it's not one of those things where you can say, oh, yeah, for sure, because he's talented, he's going to be a dude. It doesn't work that way. I wish it did.
I think it's a very deep quarterback league, but it's very
not a lot proven.
Yes, it's very middle heavy. It's very middle heavy, right? There's a couple at the top, and then everybody else is like, well, you like this, but you're not sure. They haven't proven this, but they're not good at this. They're great at this. I mean, it's
a clear one to me. Like, JT did a great job last four games of the year last year. I like a lot what he was able to provide to Georgia in the final four games. They could push the ball. Finally, things opened up downfield, all that other stuff. I loved it. But it's Matt Corral by a pretty wide margin to me right now. And that's, granted, interceptions are of concern. You cannot put your team in a position to overcome six interceptions. I don't care what the circumstances are.
Or five.
The good news is, take out those two games, he had only three the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Piece of cake. But I do think he is, without question, going into the year, the guy in the league that if I had to go win one today, that's the guy I want.
Is there a good chance that a lot of his turnovers came either because he or the offensive staff knew what that defense was, and the mindset was press, 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 because if we don't score on almost every possession, it's really not going to matter.
Yes.
Or was that just him being the ultimate gunslinger, thinking that he could – I mean, the one in the LSU game where he gets – the defender's got his jersey, and he spins, and he just sidearms. That's egregious.
He's still pretty young, though.
That cannot happen.
We saw Daniel Jones do it for the Giants last year, too. I mean, sometimes you're just trying to make a play, and you try too hard.
And that Arkansas game, first time he really was exposed to the drop eight, that type of defense that was just sitting reading his eyes. I mean, that's a great learning experience. Now you realize what you have to do against that, which you don't practice against that. Right? I mean, you don't practice against a team going to go drop eight against you 99% of the day.
Maybe 2 minute, possibly some every now and then.
Yeah, 2 minute with the other team up 14. Like, you don't see that on regular down and distance in the second quarter.
All right, so having two guys that know the quarterback position as well as anybody in the country, I'd like to ask you guys this about every team that's going to appear at SEC Media Days. Jordan, I'll ask you first. Personnel, scheme, acumen, Letterman returning, whatever, however you want to go with this. Your starting quarterback right now, which defense in this league would you least like to face tomorrow? And why?
Ooh.
You got yours, Greg?
Yes.
You know? Go ahead.
I'm going Alabama. They're the only team.
I was trying to not go there.
Like, they're the only. I know, and I understand that they're the only team though that has big time answers at all three levels. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel really good about what A&M brings back for sure. I think Bama has better personnel on the perimeter. That is. So I think Josh Jobe's going to be a star. He was a little under the radar, living in the shadows last year. He's going to be a star. He's an alpha. So I really believe that Bama, with all three levels being able to be figured out, I think they are the team that I'd least like to face defensively, at least early on.
What levels concern you about the LSU defense? What level do they not have figured out?
I would say LSU – I would say Bama and LSU are comparable up front defensively. I would say that that is – reasonable. I would say the second level is of the tiniest bit of concern. Now, Mike Jones coming in from Clemson, is he going to all of a sudden solidify that spot? I don't know, but I would say that that's probably the biggest drop-off from 19, is that that linebacker core are not absolute glass eaters. Is that a reasonable take?
It is, but I think they have a very chance. I think they have a good chance to be. Obviously we know what Mike Jones. I think Damone Clark's been waiting to bust out.
Right, he's kind of quarterback
next
well
in line,
though.
And I think Olajari and Gay had the ability to do it.
Yeah, they have the ability. Last year they didn't do it. I might say A&M over Georgia, honestly, just because I think they have an elite guy in DeMarvin Leal on the edge. I think schematically Elko does a lot more sometimes than Kirby does. Kirby, what they do is very complex. Elko will throw more at you. Right, so as a quarterback, I want to go against preparing against less looks, right? And I think Elko will throw a ton of stuff at you, but both those are tough. But I agree with Alabama.
I think they have the fewest question marks.
Yeah,
I mean, is Henry To'o going to be the Butkus Award winner? I don't think he will be. Maybe
I don't think he has to be.
No, he doesn't have to be. But you put him alongside Christian Harris. You got a good solid veteran group up front. Not the same group that was, you know, dominating games with Quinn and Williams, Jonathan Allen, you know, all those incredible Deron Payne, all those guys in 15 and 16. No, they're not that up front, but they've played a lot of football. They stay healthy. DJ Dale stays healthy. LeBron Ray stays healthy. They're in good shape there. Safety is a position of real strength. And I think corner, assuming they're as good at corner as I think they're going to be, with Malachi Moore at star, they're going to be in business on defense. I think they're the – for instance, Georgia, question marks at corner. I don't care how good Darion Kendrick is. I have a question mark. I don't know. All right, LSU, question marks at middle linebacker or at second level defensively. Right now, not saying Mike Jones won't be great.
Sure.
Just saying I haven't seen him do it in an LSU Tiger uniform. A&M, while they bring back an awful lot, so still a team that got torched by Alabama. So, granted, everyone did. Nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
But there's reason to believe that A&M, while – legit up front. I think they're really good up front, probably the best defensive line in the SEC with Leal and Clemens and Peavy and Jackson and Tyree Johnson, all those guys. I think they're going to miss Buddy Johnson, a linebacker, and I think that is a position that they need to play at a really high level, and I'm not 100% sure they're going to have that this year.
So it kind of leads back to what we were talking about early last week, Jordan, and we had the debate of our college football defense is going to bounce back this year, specifically in the SEC. We both agreed, yes. Now, does that mean we're going back to 92 Alabama defense? No, but do you anticipate defenses looking a lot better this year than they did last year?
Not, I mean, relatively yes, but not.
Because last year was historically bad,
yeah,
a lot.
But I think that's the way the offenses are going.
Sure.
I think this game is cyclical, and I think right now it's leaning towards the offense having the weighted advantage, and I think it's going to be that for a number of years. All right, all the defenses are now recruiting to try to be quicker at the second level, especially the third, but even on the edges as well. And they're still playing catch-up to what this scheme can do, not just tempo anymore, but what this scheme can do, like LSU getting four and five guys out consistently in protection, in routes and protecting with five and spreading the field, making you cover sideline to sideline. So, yes, it'll be better, but I still think we're on the trend of this is going to be an offensive-dominated
sure.
league.
Thanks for stopping by, man. Always good to catch up. Enjoy dinner.
I'll get you another
night.
Refill of that coffee here.
I'll bring them upstairs later this afternoon.
Did you guys go mini corn dogs last night?
Oh.
Yeah, he had
crushed.
A few.
You know what was the winner, though? The pimento cheese ball.
Oh, they'll
little,
get you.
I had never had those.
Oh.
Yeah, that was
don't be scared.
I tried to get him to go with the what's the chicken sandwich that you get or whatever.
Oh, Herb Vincent's here, everybody. We can start the show, Herb.
The chicken sandwich that you get's got, like, pimento cheese in it. I mean, it's
like
probably
three different slabs of bacon.
That's the Southern King.
Yeah.
It's my go-to.
I tried to get him to get it.
It's my go-to.
My love handles don't need that.
Yeah, no, Solo Social took good care of us last night. So, Jordan Rogers, appreciate you stopping by. Always good to see you. And great stuff there. We're going to wrap up day one of our coverage of SEC Media Days next right here on Jocks 94.5. SEC Media Days 2021, Radio Row, live, McElroy and Kublik in the morning. Been a good show today. Joe Tessitore, if you missed that, stop by earlier. That was just fantastic. Podcast up at JocksFM.com.
You like the boxing conversation more so than anything.
I just think that people totally forget that Joe is a boxing expert. And because of Deontay Wilder, largely, we have a lot of boxing fans here in Central Alabama.
We have a lot of sports fans here in Central Alabama.
It's great that a lot of people have become aware of it and how much fun it can be, and Deontay's success has a lot to do with that. So if we have an expert on, I want him to speak on things that he's an expert on. But Joe was great. JocksFM.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Go check out the podcast. Rate that. Review it for us. Subscribe for us. We always appreciate that.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe. And if you rate less than 5 stars, don't rate.
Don't waste your time.
Yeah. Okay.
We appreciate that. And then Jordan Rogers spending a couple segments with us there. Just really cool to talk about quarterbacks. It was interesting, Greg, what he says, and you kind of agreed with him, just how the middle of the league and what their quarterbacks are, there really seems to be a logjam there. But as you do your prep for SEC Media Days and as you begin to prepare for the season,
right,
is there a guy that sticks out in the sort of the middle of that pack that you feel is better suited to make the leap? Because you talked about last year, not a lot of second-year guys made that leap.
Right.
Is there somebody, not necessarily second-year guy, but that's not number one, number two, even number three, that you feel like, okay, this kid's in a really good spot, and I could see him advancing, not doing what Mac did last year, but
sure,
just a similar jump based on what a lot of people think?
Well, first of all, I think that Jimbo does a great job with quarterbacks. So whether it's Zach Calzada or Haynes King, I think they're going to be really good. I think Bryce Young is a star. But we can't say that yet. I mean, we can assume that based on his pedigree, what he did in high school, what he did in limited action, all that stuff. That's a great assumption to make. But we don't know that without a shadow of a doubt. We don't know that. Remember, Blake Barnett took the first snap of the 2016 season.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget that. So you don't know until it happens. And when the lights get bright and the stage gets tall, some crumble and some rise to the occasion. I happen to think that Bryce will rise to the occasion, but we are still making an assumption there. So the guy that I have seen play an extended period of time that I think is going to be really good is Emory Jones. And it's not as much about Emory Jones. It's as much about his talent, skill set, experience, etc. Couple that with the fact that the quarterback-friendly offense that Dan Mullen likes to run and the way he will always position the offense to best take advantage of the quarterback's strengths is something that I think is really exciting as a quarterback. So I think that the middle tier, like you said, we're going to have a completely different ranking at the end of the year than we have right now. Matt Corral might still be one, but I don't know that right now. I know that there are a lot of guys that I'm extremely bullish on. Now we're just in see it to believe it mode. Because we can all guess, we can all assume, we can all look at recruiting rankings, but until they're out there and the bullets start flying, we're not really sure 100% what we're going to have in a bunch of different places.
I was surprised Jordan Rodgers is high on Miles Brennan as he is. Maybe not just saying that he's going to be the starter, but that he thinks he'll excel to the extent that he thinks that he will. I think Max Johnson ends up being the starter there, but he did bring up good points about the fact that he's been essentially in this offense. Jake Peets was there in 19 where he was the backup, so that understanding may be a little bit more advanced for Miles Brennan. Did that change your opinion on what you think Brennan is or maybe can be?
No, I think he should get – I know Max Johnson took the first reps in the spring. Personally, I think Miles Brennan did nothing to lose the position. He had an abdominal injury, a rare, unusual injury that ended his season. I think he should get the first crack at it. I really do. Now, Max Johnson might ultimately be more productive, which might ultimately lead to him becoming the starting quarterback. And I really like, there's something special about that kid. I don't know what it is, but his feel, his touch, his size, and the fact that he has 4 years of eligibility left makes it really difficult for me to think he won't ultimately be the guy. But Miles Brennan should get the first crack at it in fall camp, and if Max Johnson can unseat him throughout the course of fall camp, then we know that he will have actually really earned the position as opposed to kind of being the holdover from last year.
We're going to talk a lot about those, the intangibles that quarterbacks bring, the things that happen behind the scenes, the way you're viewed by your teammates, the extra things that don't show up in the box scores or with the stats. I think that's where Max has the advantage. I think his demeanor, I think the way he handles himself, does it hurt the fact that his dad's a Super Bowl winning quarterback? Absolutely not. I think he's known it for a long time. His mom was a college volleyball player, super successful. I think that competition and the level of it and having to be a leader, finding leadership has always been a part of his family. To me, those are the things that are going to be a little bit different for him. I think as far as how you throw the ball, how you make your reads, get through your progressions, how you handle protections, I think all those are going to be very similar.
Right.
And I think that's actually a great spot for LSU to be in. When we talk about some of these reasons that people are for or against LSU, it's not one that gets brought up a ton in that LSU may be in the best position in the league from a quarterback perspective when you're talking about depth. And if you had to go to the next guy in line, whoever wins that starting job.
That's a good point.
There are not a lot of teams that are going to be able to put in what LSU is going to be able to put in from an experience standpoint and from an athletic and talent standpoint.
I think you're right. I think depth. And by the way, now, you got to have two. I mean, I don't care how good your offensive line is. There is a possibility with how offensive lines have gotten increasingly leaky over the last decade, you got to have two quarterbacks. You have to.
Well, hold on. It's not even offensive lines. Let's think about it from this perspective. How many offenses are intentionally turning defensive linemen loose? Or defensive ends or outside linemen? Just guys lined up near the line of scrimmage. How many offenses are just saying, we're not blocking you?
Yeah. Well, how many
RPO,
offenses?
RPO, replay, what,
right.
Screen, whatever it is. I mean, there are five times more plays where a guy lined up at the line of scrimmage is just not blocked
right.
than there were even when you played.
Dude, how about how many times guys are running the quarterback? Leaving defensive linemen unblocked, sure. But you're also running the quarterback in some cases up to 20 times a game. I don't care how big and tough your quarterback is. That takes its toll. In
right.
this league, that takes its toll. So it's – no, you got to have two, and I think the transfer portal and the free transfer adds another layer of complexity to handling the quarterback position correctly. Because if for whatever reason you have a clear-cut number one and the number two is a really good player, you don't think that that number two is surveying the landscape a little bit?
Absolutely.
Saying, hey, you know, hey, just so you know, Kentucky needs a guy, or Arkansas needs a guy, or whoever it ends up being, someone needs a guy. So would they be able to leave at the end of fall camp and go start day one? Probably not. But if they're 2 weeks into fall camp and they're not getting the reps or the opportunities they thought they should get, don't be shocked if guys start to move as late as the end of August.
It's not even if another team needs a guy. I mean, Kentucky lost a quarterback 2 years ago that had a chance to come back and compete for the starting job. And he goes to Ohio State to sit behind Justin Fields. So it doesn't even always come down to finding schools that absolutely need another quarterback right now. It just has to do with getting into a situation that they're going to like better. We got more SEC Media Days coming up next with three-man front. Pat and Lance are going to be sitting here at this table, and we'll be back tomorrow, 7 to 10 a.m., right here on Jocks 94.5.